Between the Barrels, where every rider has a story. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Between the Barrels. This is the fourth episode back, and if you haven't listened to the previous interviews, make sure that you do so. I'm your host, Madeline Green, and this week's interview is a tell-it-like-it-is lady and a fierce competitor in the barrel racing arena. Take a listen to Ryan Padone. Hey, Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, and you?
I'm good. So before we get into the horse questions, let's talk a little bit about your marathon.
Okay.
So I'm actually training for one in the fall. So how tough was it?
You know what? My personality, like in my head, I enjoy challenges, and to me, 26.2 miles doesn't really sound that far. It really doesn't, like, in my head, I'm like, over there in, like, Africa and stuff, those people, like, run and walk that three times that much in a day, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'm a lot healthier and stuff, so there should be no problems, and plus we're doing it, like, for fun. So, anyhow, Oliver, he's Caroline Boucher's husband. He's hilarious. So he was like, let's run a marathon. I was like, okay, we'll do the Cowtown Marathon. And this was last fall. Well, in November, I hurt my hip pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I had to be off, like, from working out for 45 days straight and let my hip heal. There was, like, some soft tissue around that hip flexor. Seriously hurt.
Oh.
So, I like to box, so I go to, like, an MMA gym.
Yeah.
At 3 days a week, and I box, and then I started, like, learning how to wrestle and stuff like that. So, like, that's really good cardio and fitness, but I was off of all that for 45 days. And so when January came, Oliver's like, hey, you've been training? I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I do my little Peloton, and I mean, but to me, 26.2, I was like, I did half marathons really easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some people reaching out to me like, Ryan, are you, you know, training? I was like, you don't want to ask me about my training because I'm so busy. I didn't really train properly, probably.
Right.
And I was up in San Antonio. So, like, the day, like, it was a hot chance I'd make the finals, but probably not. I was in the wild card, and I didn't make the finals for Saturday night, which was good in a way because I was gonna have to figure out how to get a driver to drive me back so I could just sleep a little bit before that marathon on Sunday.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So I drove back, got my horse's foot up, laid down at 12:30, was back awake at 3:30. I met Oliver in Fort Worth getting ready for it. Started at 7. They have you, like, in different corrals. Like, if you're going to run a marathon, the Cowtown Marathon is the one to run because it's so enthusiastic with all the people, like, in the neighborhood of Fort Worth.
Right.
Like, there's people that sit outside their house. There's live bands. There's, like, it's a big, big, like, kind of party for runners, you know, or people that want to try to accomplish, like, a marathon or a half marathon. And they also have the Ultra, which I'm not going to do, though. I'm going to make it a yearly tradition to run the Cowtown Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe because I wanted to run a marathon before I turned 40, and I turned 40 in April. So I'm going to, like, before I turn 45, I'm going to run the Ultra, which at the Cowtown Marathon is like 38 miles, but an Ultra is like anything over like 26.2.
Right.
And so they have, like, different ultras, but I didn't lose any toenails. I was really impressed with that. I was really, really good. I thought I'd finished my marathon in 4.5 hours, and I was like, wow, this is gonna be great. But when I hit like 24, like right before the 24 mile mark, I felt great from my waist up, but my quads, they were like, girl, we is tired. And I was like, hey, y'all wake up. Because my goal was never to stop, and I was not going to break a walk, even though my gait kind of looked like a walk, but it was still a trot.
yeah, that's so funny.
So I finished in 5:08, and the last 3 miles killed me. I had it in for 4.5 hours, but the last 3 miles, I mean, it was hilarious. I was laughing because it just made me laugh what the body does, you know?
Right. I've tried to do this before, and every time either I have some kind of knee injury or like a hip injury, kind of like you. And so I want to get one under my belt. At least I'll do this one far enough in advance. I'll have to train. I don't think I could do it like you did.
it's honestly, it's mental training. I swear, it's just mental. And I suggest you do a fun one.
Awesome. So now we'll move on to the horses. So kind of tell us your story when it comes to barrel racing. How did you get started from the very beginning?
You know, I grew up in Florida on a dairy farm. And for whatever reason, I always liked horses when I was little, tiny. And we had like ranch horses and stuff. And I will say one thing for my dad. He always, for me and my brother both, if we were into something, he would try to find the very best people to put us with, or, you know, try to get into that world. And I was little and wanted to barrel race. And so there was some people, Alan and Wendy Parker, they lived in Tampa, and he, you know, had me riding. And then we started going to ride with Alan and Wendy Parker, and then, you know, kind of branched on and grew from there. And I took a break from barrel racing when I was like in eighth grade or whatever. And the only reason why I went back to barrel racing was because when I moved back to Florida, I lived in Texas my freshman year of high school, but I only played sports in eighth and ninth grade. And then when I moved back to Florida, we have some friends and they're like, Ryan, you want a high school rodeo? And I was like, no, but I love to dance. Like, I love to dance. And they're like, well, they have high school rodeo dances. I was like, well, sign me up then. I'll be all about that. So then I got into goat tying, and I really liked goat tying too, because I like sports that, you know, like barrel racing, it's you and the horse. Goat tying, it's like you can practice to be great, you know, like as much, like, even if you're, because I'm not natural really in anything. I have a really good outlook on things. Mm-hmm. And I had to train my brain like this, because I used to worry about failing, or like be scared to fail, and or, you know, I get that pressure instead of like changing my outlook. And my brain is really strong now, but I've read like a lot of books and, you know, focus a lot on gratitude, and I never really get too caught up in like failure. I just like think it's another step to the process of reaching the top. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a natural, like you see these people that are naturally gifted. So I tend to like sports or things that you can take a little bit of natural talent and I can apply extreme work ethic, and then you get somewhere.
Right.
So I, you know, I enjoyed goat tying too. And then I went to college, and I really thought I wanted to be a human acupuncturist and human homeopath, which when I went to college, I had like my first set of fraternity colts ran in 2006. And it was like, I'm kind of hard headed. So I didn't really know about the importance of, you know, writing the papers and stuff. So, you know, I always, which this is like a good thing and a bad thing, because I always think myself, like, I love my things. So I see a lot of people, like, and I tell a lot of young people this, like, if you'll love your own things, like, you watch other people and you learn from the winners, run away from jealousy. Like, don't be jealous. Like, take what they do, embrace what they do, and be happy for them, you know. But I always want to outrun people, even people that I may not care for as like friendship level, I still respect them if they're a winner. Mm-hmm. And you can learn from them, you know, and you can be happy for, you know, their horse or whatever, because it takes a lot of hard work to win. I always loved my horses, even though I might not been riding the best pedigree. In my head, I thought my stuff was the best pedigree. So I learned how to, you know, so to say, like make a chicken salad out of chicken shit, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and I really enjoy the horse and the process of it. 2006 was like my first year. And then we moved out to Texas, and I was going to human acupuncture school in Austin, and then dabbling in training. And then, I lived in Weatherford, and I was driving back and forth, and then moved to Decatur. And then I just had clinics to finish up in the human acupuncture school. I stopped going down to Austin and then focused on training. And that's when, like, 2011 was kind of a pivotal year. Like, was like my first winner of a horse for a fraternity horse and stuff. And then, you know, being out in Texas, to me, like, just having all the competition, and we have a lot of access to, you know, different barrel races, and, you know, the world revolves around a horse out here.
Right.
Kind of helped me grow and you're amongst some of the very, very best. And not that there's not great trainers all across the United States, but there's just a ton of them in our area.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in other areas, there's great trainers, but the amounts of them in our area is just like, you're only as good as your last run. And I mean, like, nobody dominates completely out here, you know, like anybody can outrun you out here. Getting moved out here and just growing as a trainer and growing as a person as you get older, life lessons and stuff. But
so kind of a fun question. What would you tell your younger self if you could go back and kind of have a conversation with her?
I honestly, like, one thing, like, I had to really work on my mental, because my mind was, to me, my weakest link. And so, and sometimes, because I'd sometimes get real nervous under pressure. Mm-hmm. Now I freaking love pressure now, but I had to teach myself to love pressure. And so, everybody has their own way of dealing with it. Some people are naturally great at dealing with it. That was my weakest thing, would be my mind. I was not a winner mentally. I'd beat myself before I go in the alley. So my younger self, I probably would have started working on my mind a lot sooner than, let's say, 2010.
Right.
But, you know, like, you don't look at it. And I think a lot, I would go back to my younger self and started doing more like mixed martial arts and stuff like that for your brain. I encourage, like, a lot of people that have, like, daughters to train your brain to be strong and not worry about what other people are doing or saying or whatnot. And I always beat to my own drum anyways, and I always had a pretty good, like, if I went to the barrel race and I didn't do well, in my head, I didn't think it was that big a deal. Like, right. I just go back and work. But I think a lot of people struggle with that. But my biggest thing would probably be just work on my mind a little bit sooner. 2010 was when I really went to work on my brain in 2010. And then you can kind of see the results of it. And then, you know, just make sure you're true to yourself.
And so obviously, you know, you've been talking about mental game. And how do you actually mentally prepare for big competitions like Futurities and just big barrel races? Is there anything specifically that you do?
You know what? I am a person, like, as long as I know that I prepped 100%, then when I go there, I just let things happen. And a lot of times I think people take it way too personally and they get real upset, like, if their horses don't work or whatever. I know that I've tried to build these horses up. So I go there and I'm like, okay, I work on myself through fitness. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I love my horses. I love the process of it. I'm riding really great pedigrees. Like, I'm so grateful for these wonderful pedigrees that I'm able to ride, and I'm grateful for the opportunities that we have to run for this kind of money. And so I just enjoy the process. You will hardly ever see me real upset at a barrel race. And if I'm upset, like, there must be something personally I'm mad at myself about, you know?
Right.
Not over my horses. Like, I go in there and I do the very best I can. And a lot of times, like, if I totally get my ass handed to me, I'll go buy the videos of the people that won and just, like, watch their runs, watch their riding, and, like, try to take in, like, what they're feeling at that moment. Like, those perfect runs, that perfect throwdown, like, and, you know, try to have my mind straight and watch what I'm doing and make sure I physically feel well and, like, I'm riding my horses correct and what kind of confidence I'm flowing into my colts and stuff. But I really enjoy the process. So I see a lot of people, and especially a lot of trainers, that, like, win and then they'll get down on themselves if they're not on a winning streak or something. I'm like, oh, everybody gets a turn. You just keep freaking going out there and throwing down. And as long as you're, like, on the, like, going forward and have that mindset, it's going to be your turn sometime or another. I've seen it too many times. And it doesn't mean, like, if you're going through a time and you're like, oh, my colts aren't clocking, but they're, like, right there. Well, they're going to come on and clock you. You have all year. And the nice thing about it is now we have derbies. And a lot of these derbies are allowing you to run these things till 8. So what if they don't mature at 4? You know, just slow it down. don't spin the entry fee, let the horse build into itself. And the only reason why I can really relate to those kind of horses is I feel like I was one of those horses, you know, a late bloomer. Hell, I still haven't bloomed yet, you know. So, I'll be 40 in April. So, like, I get it. And I just always look for the good in my colt. Like, instead of coming out and saying, like, what they did wrong, I'm like, okay, they did this right. Okay, so we'll go home and work on this and strengthen this, you know. And I'm big about mental projection and, like, just seeing it and feeling it. And a lot of times, like, those young horses are either young or they get sore, or, you know, I just miss, like, instructed them a little wrong or whatnot. So I really enjoy the process, but I love a horse. And I don't, if a horse is trying, they don't have to be 1D right now. I've had a lot of horses that were, you know, end up being good horses at 8, 9, 10 for other people, or you lay that foundation down and somebody else can get on them and bond with that horse. And, like, that's, like, the picture that I love to see, a horse to go on. Like, yeah, I can win on a horse that's ready to win right now, but I can also, like, build into it and feel, like, the change and stuff and enjoy that stepping stone. So I don't get too worked up.
Yeah, yeah. And you've been in the industry kind of at all levels. What keeps, you know, your fire burning to match that level of commitment year after year?
Honestly, not everyone has the opportunity to truly love what they do. So I feel really fortunate to have found a niche that I love it so much. And I'm so grateful for it, like, and so grateful that I'm, like, in the moment of the industry where it's, like, really growing and changing and, you know, you're, like, in the middle of it. I don't know. I just get excited about being here in the present, in the moment, and just, I just enjoy every aspect of it. There's nothing else I'd rather do. So even, like, when I have people like, Ryan, there's other things in the world. Yeah, there is, but, like, everything circles back to what I do. And when I tell you I have a good time riding colts at midnight, like, I always have a good time. It doesn't feel like work to me.
Yeah.
And I freaking just, I love it. And everything circles back to it. So, like, my hobbies, like, I got into, like, the boxing and learning to wrestle and stepping outside my comfort zone a little bit. But that goes to my fitness and my mental strength. And that's, like, when I tell you, like, younger kids could benefit so much through it, like, the practice and the mental aspect of mixed martial arts and stuff, it all circles back to, like, riding and my job, which doesn't feel like a job. And I guess that's why my personality is kind of fiery anyways. And if I'm into it, I'm all in.
Right.
If I'm not into it, I'm all out.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm into, like, you know, I was into that election in 2020. I mean, I was there in Washington, whatever. Well, then I was so burnt out with politics, because when you go down this rabbit hole of what makes up our country, and, like, you go back centuries and stuff, and then my brain was just like, oh, my gosh. So then I flipped over and I got into MMA. So, like, now I'm just like, you know, I'm gonna control my own little world,
right?
And you know, like, I'm big on, like, I am a, you know, Christian. I believe in God and stuff. And so I, you know, I gone down, like, this whole mental deal where, you know, you have to control your own little world. So I'm big on, like, local politics. Okay. But even, like, going to local politics, like, I'm so sick of politicians. They're all, like, fake. I went and their handshakes are, like, slimy. And
yeah.
I had to, like, skip out of the political world a little bit. Now I'm into, like, UFC. I love watching that. And then, like, the whole analogy of how they have to go in the octagon. They train, they work. And then they have to go in this octagon in front of all these people, listen to all this shit talk. You win or lose, you gotta get up. You have to, like, speak after you're done. And then you have to go back and train some more. And then you have to be gritty enough to be like, okay, I'm gonna get back in there and I'm gonna whoop their ass. You know, like, I love that mental aspect of it.
Right.
So I just enjoy life. in my little areas. And if I'm having fun and I'm loving it, I'm into it. And then if I'm not having fun and I'm not loving it, I get out of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just not worth it.
Let's talk a little bit about training. Kind of take us through your process and what you do with a horse when you get one in and start training from the beginning.
So I usually get those horses back like the end of the two-year-old year. Some of them I get in the three-year-old year. Like, I just like let them have fun. I like do different things to kind of get them in tune to my body. So I ride a lot, mainly with my body, and I keep it really simple. I do a lot of long trotting. I keep it really fun and simple for them. I show them like kind of the idea of it. I never make, like, if they are having an issue with somewhere, I never make that issue a big deal. Like, I always keep it fun for them because I want to train like how I would want to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything I keep is light and fun because you got to think they're babies. Some of them are way more mature than others. Some of them have that natural aggressive, like, I got this, I'm going to be a winner. And some of them, you can feel the talent in it. You might have to, like, you know, boil in the flame a little bit and get it to grow. And so keep it fun, keep it simple, get them in tune to my body where they can feel me, where I want them to square up and stuff. And I keep it light and simple. Like, I do a lot of long trotting, and I don't put a lot of pressure on them, and I kind of let them ease into the pressure. Some people believe the opposite, like you need to put the pressure on them and see the ones that can handle. But because our deal has changed so much,
right,
the ones that are going to handle the pressure are going to handle the pressure, whether I put that pressure on them or not. The ones that aren't. And a lot of times I think maturity takes care of that. So I just kind of read those colts as I go along. The ones that are ready to enter and go on, okay. The ones that aren't, okay, we'll go to like little jackpots and let them grow up into themselves. And I've kind of changed my approach and to that a little bit because, one, I live in an area where we can't go to jackpots every night of the week. And two, there's so many great shows and so many nice fraternities that you have all year.
Right.
And you have 3 years after that.
I like that approach. Do you feel like there's a breed that you really like or that kind of fits you better than anything else?
You know what? I can get along with pretty much anything. Like, if you look at my statistics, I'll ride. I mean,
yeah,
I'll ride whatever, you know. If they speak my language, we can get along as long as they're a horse. I do feel like as I've become older and I can kind of choose a little bit, I'd rather ride better pedigrees, like out of better mares, just because my statistically it's just better, you know, like,
yeah,
better chances of winning. However, I can get along with pretty much anything. I do better with a feely, lighter, maybe hot horse. I do good with insecure horses, like, you know, like, hey, it's gonna be all right, this is fun, you know, like, it's no big deal. And I can build certain types of horses' confidence. I can get along with a horse that needs to be saddled and tied out some, you know, like, I feel like I probably would have been one of those horses, you know, that need to be tired, focus a little bit more. So I can get along with pretty much anything. I don't, a horse that needs to be like, get their butt beat to focus and stuff, they don't normally fit me because it's very hard for me to be serious.
Yeah.
Like, I'm serious. Like, I have a good work ethic and I'm serious about winning and I'm serious about that stuff, but I'm not serious like, look, I need you to freaking pay attention. Like, you'll see my horses, they're like naughty, you know, they've got lots of passion, they're naughty, they're, you know, they enjoy what they do. Some of them are a little bit shit talkers, some of them are a little bit like, I mean, you really shouldn't allow that horse to do that. I was like, you know, but when I'm on their back and I go in that arena, most of the time they're gonna work for me.
Yeah.
So they work in the right areas, but yeah, my horses are slightly unruly. I get along with those, you know, unruly ones a little bit.
I love that. That's funny.
Yeah.
I think that training in the futurity world is kind of something that's a little hard to break into. I feel like you always have some people who just happen to do good at some of those big futurities. But what advice do you have for someone who wants to look at it as a career year after year?
You know, like, what I see, especially like with the younger generation, one, you got to enjoy what you do. Two, like, the younger generation has no idea. Like, you don't just wiggle your nose and win.
Right.
And then I see, like, a lot of people, like, this is what happens. Like, they'll win, and then they'll go through a rough streak. And especially, then you'll hear the parents, well, I just feel so bad. They work so hard. Well, so do I. I fucking work hard too, you know?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we all work hard. You know, grit up, figure the shit out, and enjoy the process of it. Like, there's ways, and you can watch other people, and you learn, and you build, and, like, mentally, you don't become beat down. It's like no feeling sorry for yourself. Like, if you want to do it, do it. If you can't handle it mentally, go freaking cut hair.
Right.
Nine to five. Like, whatever, you know, like, I don't understand. Like, so I don't do well with people that want self-pity or, like, looking for me to feel sorry for them. I can't handle it, you know, because
yeah.
When I was starting, I would pay money to work for some of the best. I would pay them. Like, I would want to just, like, I was so grateful to even be around some of those people to win. And you just get that energy from them. You learn different things from different people. And in my head, I know, like, when I was first going, like, I mean, I smile a lot. I'm pretty happy-go-lucky. Like, I'm pretty smiley. So, like, they, I mean, I even, some of the people would call me smiley. And I know they were thinking, oh, this girl's smiling, showing up here, donating her damn money. But in my head, I'm like, I'm going to win this shit today. And then if not, which a lot of times it wasn't happening, but I learned from it. So, like, I have a hard time relating to these younger generation or people that are just like, oh, I can't do it. Work harder.
Yeah.
You know? I've had people, I'm like, look, you're going to have to get to that gym and you're going to have to work out. Like, you're not as natural as so-and-so. So you're going to have to work it a little harder. What's the big deal? Just do what it takes or don't do it at all. So I have a hard time relating with people that, like, self-pity or want me to feel sorry for them and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, and if you don't enjoy it, do something else. It's not easy. I mean, like, I don't understand. Like, you can watch people, like, yes, there's people that win one year, and then there's people that are always right there, and there's people that, you know, maybe drop down for a little bit, and they got to scratch their way up. But the people that are scratching their way up, I mean, they get back to the top. But I really believe, like, if you enjoy what you do and, like, just not whip yourself down and just, like, every little thing, like, you take it as a lesson, it's not that hard. I mean, we live in America. We have, like, food. I mean, like, it's not like we're starving. I mean, like, the USA is, like, number one country for obesity. I mean, like, what are people worried about? We're able to drive these nice trucks and trailers. We have the best bloodlines as far as barrel horses go. And we have so much opportunity. And then I listen to these people, like, so upset about this run today. I'm like, really? You know, watch your video, fix the shit, and move on. Like, there's sex trafficking going on right now.
Right.
You know, and we're here, and you're boo-hooing about not being able to finish your first barrel. Figure that shit out. Or just go do something else.
Yeah.
And nobody cares. Like, people want to come out and be whining and complaining. And if anybody pretends they care, they really don't. And nobody wants to hear it. And it may be their mom. That's what I told a little girl. She was 13. And I was like, you want to come hang out with us, pick stalls and be here. I want you working. And I don't want any complaining. No, nobody cares. Nobody wants to hear it. And your mama might care, but I'm not your mama. And neither are these girls working with me. So we don't want to hear it. it's true. Like, nobody wants to hear the negative. There's so much negative in the world. Like, take the good, leave the bad. We have so much to be thankful for.
Yeah.
And it just cracks me up, you know. And the worst thing is when you sit around with a bunch of trainers, which I respect all my trainer friends, and they all just like, this one has no heart. This one has that, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, maybe they're just immature.
Yeah.
Or if you're not enjoying the horse, send it somewhere else. Or a lot of having the right attitude going into the horses, especially with the pedigrees that we're riding nowadays, like, they should all pretty much, in my opinion, make. Some of them might be a little older. The best horse running right now, in my opinion, the best horse, like, if she has her run, she's going to put a couple of tenths, is that MJ Seeger's Fast Lane, or like that horse, she's 7 this year.
Right.
Did you hear about her when she was 4? I don't know her total backstory, but I started watching her when she was 6 coming into 7, and you saw shiny moments, and completely consistently shiny moments now. But, you know, like, was she the hottest 4-year-old? No. Hottest 5-year-old? No. But now, she can't run that thing. Like, she's, when she throws down and she leaves the barrels up, she's putting 2/10. She's breaking arena records. You know, it's just like, I just think people get caught up too much instead of looking at, like, the big picture,
right,
and enjoying the process. Or if you have a horse that was clocking and now it's not clocking, and then you're just like so sad, why be sad? Figure it out. And then when you figure out what makes that horse tick or what's bothering that horse, how much more will you know in the future to help other horses when you run into that problem? Like, it's just a learning process.
I definitely think that's very true. When you look at, you know, people who are able to do barrel racing and training for a living, like, it's a pretty good job.
Oh, it's a wonderful job. We work with horses. We're out in the country. We have our animals. I mean, it's a beautiful life. It's,
yeah,
so beautiful, you know. And to me, working with a horse, working with animals, period, like, you can read them. You can tell, like, if they're having a bad day and this and that. A lot of times humans try to put human traits in a horse, but I honestly don't believe they operate like that. But, you know, can you imagine being, like, on Wall Street, making that money, but with a bunch of people that aren't real?
Yeah.
Like, most of them aren't real. That lifestyle's not real. A lot of those people have, like, drug problems and alcoholism and stuff because they're in a society. Yeah, you're making a lot of money, but... And you can make a lot of money in the horse industry too, but it's just, it's not real.
Yeah.
You know?
And you've also rodeoed too. So I have been dealing with this, you know, coming from a family of male barrel racers that don't go to rodeos. So our horses seem to be very shell-shocked when it comes to going to rodeos. It's just a whole different thing. What do you think some of the main differences are between barrel races and rodeos? And how do you work on getting your horse used to that environment?
You know, some horses are a little bit thrive on the crowd more than others. And the biggest thing is seasoning. And when you're seasoning, not putting the pressure on them,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like let them think it's fun. And if it doesn't go good, who gives a shit? Go to another one. And I mean, like where we are in Texas, it's beautiful because it's a wonderful thing. It's, we have, you can go to Northside Saturday, Friday and Saturday night every week of the year. And so it's like super nice, you know, and it gets those colts seasoned and everything. And then you know, UPRA rodeos and CPRA rodeos, and you can season those horses along. And I just try to place them on ground that's not going to wreck them and set it up. And in my mind, I like don't take it as a big deal. Let them kind of come into their own. And the biggest thing I think is the ground, but I think rodeo committees and everything, like the WCRA and everything, they're really working on trying to make the ground better for these equine athletes so that they can learn on it.
Yeah. I love to ask these questions because I feel like we all have a horse or two that kind of have made an impact on our lives. Who are those horses for you, and kind of share y'all's story?
You know, everybody has their take. Like, they're like, you know, I've had a lot of people like, well, I don't want to sell this one because I might not have another great one, or this is the greatest one I've ever had. And, you know, it's funny because maybe I should be more grateful, but in my head I'm like, shit, if this one's that great, better things are gonna come, you know, like,
right,
I'm gonna be learning more, the pedigree's getting better. I mean, so in my head I never think like, oh, this is the best one I've ever had, so I keep looking for the next one, or, you know, it's just fun. So, or you try to breed for better. But probably Kiss This Guy was my pivotal horse, mm-hmm. like as far as the fraternities go. He ran in 2011. I had no idea that he was going to do the things he did for me. But like, Cause for a Kiss was the year before I had sold her, and I ended up getting her back and stuff. And she, I love that mare. But her brother, Kiss This Guy, he was very strong in the fall, and I did not appreciate him as much as I probably should have. And then I had, they're all out of the same mare, so I had Cause for a Kiss and then Kiss This Guy, and then Kiss Me Bill Compton. And that he was a very nice horse. I tipped a barrel to win $100,000 on him at Kinder.
Mm-hmm.
He had some really shiny moments in 2013. And then you go on, like, 2015, I had a little American Solid Red Sox. I had, raised her, too. And she, she won my first slot race, which was a $20,000 slot race. But she literally placed at every single fraternity I took her to, besides Fort Smith. She ran as a five-year-old Sky Ground Shovel. And so she ran the fastest time in the BFA at the BFA that year. And so, that mare, they just keep building more confidence in them. I was, 2015, and then you went into a horse. I did not train him, but I did have him for a short time, and I won my first 100,000 slot race on him, and that was Sweet Choco Taco. He was a little different character, and I really appreciated that horse. Just a good horse. And
then, yeah.
But probably I would say Kiss This Guy, and then Feel the Sting, obviously.
Yeah.
And I had him and Trace Ducks in a Row that year. Trace Ducks in a Row was a little overshadowed by him, but he obviously did. I remember when Jason Martin, I didn't know him, but he called me to tell me to go ride these colts. And he's like, now don't get too confident. You might not be picked ride him. I was like, okay. And I mean, I wasn't. But I remember going and meeting him, and I rode him, and I was like, I just remember, you let me take this horse, give me this opportunity. I promise I'm not screwing it up. He was just a cool, arrogant, and he really did a lot for me. And then to get to the finals, I took a horse, Dasher Jones, who was a great horse with a lot of different riders.
Yeah.
But he had acquired, kind of a title of a barrel crasher, you would take out the barrel. And I ended up getting him, and I have him back now, and he's just in a pasture, but I really give him a lot of credit getting me to the finals, because he got me into the buildings. And he's a special horse. I did not train him. I just got him after he was kind of to be broken, he had issues, and we kind of worked through it, and we got to be a good team, and he was just a special horse. And he's a special horse to a lot of people, but I don't know, there's a lot of horses that taught me lessons along the way that don't get the credit.
Yeah,
their names aren't that, but they taught me so many lessons to be able to apply to other horses. I don't know, there's several along the way. I appreciate a lot of them. Some horses that people don't even know
right
taught me a lot along the way.
Yeah. Thinking about your career as a whole, what win has kind of meant the most to you?
Probably, and it's so funny because I love the fraternities even more than I would ever love a rodeo. I like the fraternity. I like the atmosphere of the fraternities. I like the people at the fraternities. I enjoy the producers. But probably the Pro Tour finale in 2020, that's what allowed me to go to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
But because it costs a lot of money to go up and down the road.
Right.
And 2020 was a hellacious year because of COVID and all. And you kind of had a team. So, I had Robert Gifford driving for, he was driving because I'd fly back from home to ride my colts. And then Jason and Charlie, it was their rig, their horse, and everything. And she was all the entering for the rodeos. She had been entering those rodeos and stuff. And then, so you get to the Pro Tour finale, and they take back the top eight from the week. And I came back eighth. I was actually in Ardmore and had to get a plane ticket back up there because I didn't think I was going to make it.
Yeah.
Anyways, I ended up eighth. And then, you're in the finals on Saturday, and there's eight girls. And all I had to do was place third or higher, and I would have been in the finals, but I headed to the NFR. But no, I placed fourth, so I was last again. And I did get back to the shootout, right? But it was just eighth, fourth. So in the shootout, I had to, win it or be second or, all that work.
Yeah.
And then for Singer to come back for that second run under that kind of pressure and me, because my struggle as a competitor was my mind and was pressure. It was a really big thing because, it's on the Cowboy Channel. You have all these people. I was really confident because that little stud was my best buddy, we were a team. And so I really didn't, in my head, I didn't feel the pressure. It was a really cool feeling, and it was a really cool feeling for it to all come together and him win that. and you have all these people. It was like a team.
Right.
And I'm not really a team person. I'm more like just me and my horse. But for that year and for the rodeo season, it was a lot of people coming together, and for it to seal the deal to it and that little horse throw down that kind of run under that kind of pressure, it was just a really good memory, you know?
And lastly, what do you still kind of hope to achieve in the sport of barrel racing, and what impact do you hope to have on it?
You know, like, I try to give back to the industry. I love the industry as a whole. Like, I love, it's wonderful to see it growing and changing. And I love the sport of barrel racing. And so I try to give back to the industry, you know, like, whether it's, like, add money at Fort Smith to have a five-year-old fraternity, because I am an advocate for having five-year-olds.
Yes, definitely.
I think we should be having a choice. I mean, I know, like, there's a lot of old-timers like, well, it didn't work years ago. It's like, well, times have changed with these incentives. Like, these incentives have changed everything.
Right.
And five-year-old, a good, really good four-year-old is going to outrun a five-year-old, okay? But there's a lot of really good, like, decent four-year-olds that would have been better as a five-year-old. So who cares? Like, let us hold them. I am a big advocate about that. So I try to give back to the industry, whether it's like local jackpots or whatever, because I think if you give back and you watch the industry grow, whether it's like a little bit, give like whatever your level is to give back, you know? So I try to give back on the industry. And there's a lot more things as a competitor that I want to achieve. My whole life is changing right at the moment. So I'm going into I'll be moving and going to a different type of partnership. And mm-hmm. I'm excited about that. So there's going to be a lot of changes in that area. And I feel like it's going to open up a lot of opportunity too. Just keep growing as a human, like being a better human across the board, and giving back to the industry and giving back to like kids and helping like people, like, or not just kids, but there's a lot of people that do it as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like their escape from life, and like just learning how to enjoy the process of it and helping people. I like to see people, like, when they buy a new horse and it's not going great, but there's potential there, like learn how to work through that process and get to have a bond with a horse where the horse has a nice life and you have fun and you're able to enjoy it. You know, you see a lot of people beat themselves up about stuff
right.
like that. So the biggest thing is, like, I guess just giving back to the industry and helping the industry grow as a whole.
That is it for Between the Barrels this week. You can always stay up to date with everything by following us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Also, if you like what you hear, leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Or if you have someone you want to hear from on the show or a question that you'd like answered, don't hesitate to shoot me an email at betweenthebarrels@gmail.com. I'm your host, Madeline Green. Tune in next week.